I want to thank you for that lovely introduction, and it's a great honor to be on this very illustrious panel. And these are really the folks, the experts, who you want to hear from today. And so what I'd like to do is simply to summarize the case and give you all the context so that you can follow the symposium. Now, inevitably, because of time constraints, we're going to have to boil down the case and only focus on some of the main tenets. On December 23, 1991, a fire broke out in a small, one-story wood-frame structure in a working-class neighborhood of Corsicana in northeast Texas. A neighbor, seeing the smoke, ran down the street toward the house, and that's when she saw Cameron Todd Willingham standing on his front porch, his bare chest blackened with smoke, his hair and eyelids singed. He was screaming, "My babies are burning up." His three children, twins who were one-year-old girls, and his other daughter, Amber, who was two, were trapped inside. Moments later, the five windows of the children's room exploded and flames just blew out, as one witness put it. Within minutes, the first fireman had arrived, and Willingham approached them, screaming that his children were trapped in the bedroom where the flames were thickest. Todd Willingham, looking on, appeared to grow more hysterical, and a police chaplain led him to the back of a fire truck and tried to calm him down. Willingham explained that his wife, Stacy, had gone out earlier that morning and that he had been jolted from sleep by his daughter Amber screaming, "Daddy, Daddy." "My little girl was trying to wake me up and tell me about the fire," Willingham said, adding, "I couldn't get my babies out." While he was talking, a fireman emerged from the house cradling Amber, and as she was given CPR, Willingham, who was 23 years old and powerfully built, suddenly stormed toward her and then ran toward the house where the babies were. He had to be physically restrained by the police chaplain and others, giving the chaplain a black eye in the process. He was taken to the hospital, where he then learned that his three children had all perished in the fire. According to the autopsy report, Amber, who was found in the master bedroom, had died of smoke inhalation, and the two twins who were in the children's bedroom had also died of smoke inhalation. Now, several days later, fire investigators fanned out to the house, trying to pinpoint the source of the blaze. One of the fire investigators was a deputy fire marshal named Manuel Vasquez. And I know John is really the expert in this, and he's going to give a much more detailed explanation of the fire evidence, but I want to give you at least some context because it is so central to the case we're talking about today. Among the indicators that the fire investigators cited were low burning along the walls and on the floor and under the beds. The investigators had been taught that fire burns down, not up, and that if you find this kind of low burning, it's an indication that some type of liquid accelerant or charcoal lighter fluid or gasoline or something had been poured on the floor. The fire investigators also said they had found what were these irregular char marks that looked like pore patterns or puddle configurations. And again, they had been taught that when you pour some type of liquid accelerant on the floor, it burns deeper in these spots, leaving these irregular char marks. They also found something called crazed glass, which is a spider web intricate pattern in the glass, which they believe was caused from rapid heating. What they said, the fire burned too hot and too fast, meaning they believe that someone had used some kind of liquid accelerant. They counted what they believe are 20 indicators of arson, more than 20 indicators of arson. And they then concluded that the fire was intentionally set and was in fact a triple homicide. Cameron Todd Willingham, who was the only person known to be in the house at the time other than the victims, immediately became the prime suspect. Police and fire investigators then canvassed the neighborhood, interviewing witnesses. Several, like the police chaplain, initially portrayed Willingham as devastated by the fire and the loss of his children. Yet over time, witnesses offered more damning statements. One neighbor said that she had not seen Willingham try to enter the house until after the authorities arrived, as if he were putting on some kind of show. Now, the police, meanwhile, began to piece together a disturbing profile of Cameron Todd Willingham. Even though he never had any, he was never arrested for any serious crimes, he was a rough and tumble character. Dropped out of high school, sniffed glue as a kid, he'd been arrested for driving under the influence, stealing a bicycle, shoplifting. He drank too much Jack Daniels and sometimes hit his wife, even when she was pregnant. Although there was no clear motive for the crime, for setting the fire, the authorities concluded that Willingham was a man without a conscience whose serial crimes had climaxed almost inexorably in murder. John Jackson, who was then the assistant district attorney in Corsicana, was assigned to prosecute the case, and he later told the Dallas Morning News that he considered Willingham to be, quote, an utterly sociopathic individual who deemed his children, quote, an impediment to his lifestyle. On the night of January 8, 1992, 2 weeks after the fire, Willingham was charged with murder. Not long after Willingham's arrest, authorities received a message from an inmate who was in the jail with him. He said that Willingham had confessed to him when he was in jail, saying that he had started the fire. The case against Cameron Todd Willingham was now considered airtight. Now, just before trial, the prosecutor offered Willingham a deal that if he pled guilty to setting the fire and to murder, he would receive a life sentence and be spared the death penalty. Willingham's two state-appointed lawyers in the case believed he should accept the offer. They looked at the fire evidence, and they believed there was no doubt that Willingham had set the fire. But Willingham refused to take the plea, saying, "I ain't going to plead to something I didn't do, especially killing my own kids." His refusal and his implacableness only confirmed to the prosecutor and to even his own defense attorneys that he was an unrepentant killer. When the case went to trial, the prosecution brought several witnesses, including the jailhouse informant, Johnny Webb, as well as a few neighbor witnesses, but the crux of the case remained the fire evidence, the scientific fire evidence from the investigators and these so-called 20 indicators of arson. Willingham only had one witness on his defense, a babysitter who had not even been present during the fire, and it took the jury barely an hour to reach the decision that he was guilty unanimously. He was sentenced to die, and as the state deputy state marshal in the case, Manuel Vasco, said, as he put it, "A fire does not lie." Now, in 1999, after Willingham had been on death row for 7 years, he began to correspond with a 47-year-old French teacher and playwright from Houston named Elizabeth Gilbert. Gilbert assumed that he was guilty, but over time she became curious about the case, and so one day she drove down to the courthouse in Corsicana and pulled the court records. And as she began to go through them, she was struck by several contradictions in the eyewitness testimony. Well, while some people said he hadn't tried to go into the fire, get back into the house, other people said he had broken a window. Some people described having to physically restrain him. And beyond that contradiction, she noticed something else that was very unusual about the eyewitness testimony. And Etiel, who's really done pioneering research in this field, will really illuminate this. But essentially, the eyewitness testimony began to grow more damning over time. Once the eyewitnesses were led to believe or suspected, or after Willingham had been arrested, their testimony began to grow damning and began to shift. And dozens of studies have shown how witnesses' memories will change as they're given new and different contextual information or contextual bias. And again, I'll let Etiel explain that much more when he talks. There was something else that Elizabeth Gilbert found startling, equally startling when she looked through the records, and that was the lack of a motive. Why would a man, a father, suddenly wake up one morning and light his house on fire, killing his three children? Willingham's wife, Stacy, said though he hit her, he had never abused the children and had never hurt them.